Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Letlhego Holdings Limited Half Year 2016 Results Conference hosted by African Alliance Capital Markets. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Harry Waldemar Brown of African Alliance. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Chris. Good afternoon, everybody. Good morning to friends down here from the States. We're delighted to have the management of Letlhego with us today to talk about the company's results for the 6 months to June. Hopefully, you've received from us the PowerPoint presentation that the speakers will be referring to, as well as the PDF of the results release. So I hope you have all the numbers in front of you. If you don't, have a look at your inbox so that you should see an email from me with all the necessary. So we have obviously we have Letlhego's chief executive Chris, we have Letlhego's chief financial officer Colin, and we have Boy Kenya with us who's the head of investor relations. So it's a full full set for us today. I've asked Chris to give us a broad appreciation of the company's performance in the 6 month period. He knows exactly what to highlight, and then I think he's going to hand off to Colin to talk about the numbers. After that, we'll go to Q&A in the normal way. So, Chris, if I can hand over to you, thank you for being with us today. Over to you.
Okay, thanks very much, Harry, and good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Hopefully you have the pack there so I can just draw a few insights from it as I walk through it fairly quickly. I'm going to talk more about the strategy and where we've moved forward, and Colin will drill down a little bit on areas I'm sure you're interested in, like costs and foreign exchange impacts. Suffice to say, it has not been an easy first 6 months in many of our markets, with rising interest rates over 700 basis points in Mozambique, for example, currency depreciation in a number of markets, etc. However, we believe the results at 9% loan growth and underlying flat half-year on half-year pre-tax profit is a satisfactory performance with that as context. Slide 3 just gives you an updated strategy stroke vision on a single page. We had our strategy session with our board in Dar es Salaam beginning of August, and it's not too changed from before, other than we have now adopted the terminology inclusive finance to capture the theme of our strategy focused at providing simple, appropriate and affordable solutions to the underserved. We've retained embracing financial inclusion at the center of the pillars, with growing the franchise, investing and diversify, still there from before. We'll talk more about Tanzania and Nigeria shortly. Enhancing customer experience around the concept of simple, appropriate and affordable solutions, and embedding the future capability model to really adapt our technology platform, processes and procedures around non-branch delivery. Core to the strategy is a new realization that we can only move as fast as we need to with strong strategic partnerships with a number of key companies working in the space we're entering. Moving to page 4, the inclusive finance agenda. Many of you will be aware we are Africa's first private sector member of the Alliance for Financial Inclusion. I will be with a number of regulators at their annual global meeting next week. And we have already seen benefits of that affiliation as an advocacy platform, as well as a networking platform among a number of key regulators that we deal with. Finmark Trust, many of you will be familiar, works on research and with DFIs alongside Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Finscope, etc. We hope a useful relationship to give us access to more DFI funding. EBS, South African Environmental, Social and Governance Consultancy, has helped audit us for compliance with the likes of SMART principles, which again gives us access to more DFI funding, as well as align our responsible lending criteria and approach to meeting customer needs. And lastly, the principal issuer, card issuer license that we got in Mozambique, a useful start to be affiliated with a global name, but there's still a number of issues with the main switch in Mozambique that means that's not going to be anything immediate. So moving to slide five, a quick update on Nigeria and Tanzania. We're reasonably happy with progress to date. Clearly this is an 18-month to 36-month journey, and indeed in Tanzania, momentum is good. We broke even in July for the first time in Advan's history, and we are now rebranded as Nasekhu Bank Tanzania. In Nigeria, a slightly more bumpy start. We have invested heavily in credit training. We've let go a number of staff who did not meet our minimum trainability standards. And we have geared up collection efforts in a number of branches where PARs were at unacceptable levels. We're seeing this year within the scenario of now a recession in Nigeria as a year to get our business fit for purpose. The next slide just updates where we are with licensing. You will have read that we got our full commercial license in Namibia after a four-year-plus journey. We hope to soft launch towards the end of this year and fully under that license next year. Nigeria, I've spoken about that microfinance banking license. Tanzania, Advance was a commercial banking business focusing on SME. Mozambique is in the final weeks of converting from a microbanking license to a full commercial license. And Rwanda is a deposit-taking microfinance license. Why am I mentioning the different ones? It's important to understand that to us the important core to this is being able to take deposits so that we can offer a full range of borrowing, savings, payments, and microinsurance solutions. We will be slightly more limited where we are a credit-only institution. Moving to the next slide, we talked about customer experience before, but we wanted to give a little more insight to the customer journey that we're on. We've always been well known for our quick turnaround for approvals and disbursements. We need to build on that approach to customer experience across our businesses, and ultimately get to a stage where we're anticipating their needs. We, along that journey, are going to need to partner with a number of providers. We, under Access Anytime, Anywhere, are partnering with a software group for our third-party agency model. We're partnering with Cellulant for our USSD approval and top-up capability. They are automating our process so that customers will be able to get credit pretty much instantaneously. Cards, obviously MasterCard I've talked about. There are a number of other technical partners that we will need to cozy up with. If we are to create an ecosystem for our customers around health, education, their home, their livelihood, etc. We have already entered a number of conversations to broaden that ecosystem, and I'm hoping in the next 12 months we can really paint a picture for you as to how our strategy looks through the lens of the customer. The next slide, slide 8, shows you how we are packaging our offering into 4 different solution areas. And if I can illustrate that on the Let's Borrow, Let's Pay with Kenya, we do group lending there today. Those small individual borrowings are provided through M-Pesa payments. They are monitored on our e-collector platform, which is a Bulgarian software running, as I say, on tablets. And customers pay us back through the M-Pesa platform. So you've got a combination of Let's Borrow, Let's Pay there. We've also, with Cellulant's help, launched top-ups in Kenya already. We've done some 20,000 e-loans since we launched that about 8 or 9 months ago for about $1.5 million. Now, small fry compared to the big players in Kenya, but it is proving that, one, our platforms enable this to be done quite quickly, and two, it is enabling us to gain some IP internally as to what digitization of our core offering might mean from a risk management, operational, etc. standpoint. Let's say we're in an earlier stage of development, working with a couple of partners there, and under Let's Live, we have entered an MOU with Sanlam, together with their partner Micro Insure, which came about through an RFP with 3 large multi-geography insurers out of South Africa. They won the mandate based on their footprint alignment with our own and their innovation around packaging and wrapping existing products that we do. Moving to slide 9, where you've got some portfolio analyzed. Good double-digit growth in most markets in an underlying currency perspective, but translating to just a 9% increase. Within there, major impacts in Botswana. We talked over year-end about increasing competition for the banks and in a lowering interest rate environment here in Botswana, which goes against global trends. They have really entered our space to the extent we've seen settlements in some months up to 80% of our payouts. Now, we've introduced a number of enhancements to our offering. For larger borrowers, we have adjusted rates, not down to where the banks are, but to try and bridge the gap between banks and our rates. We've introduced such things as payment holidays around the Christmas-January period, when people tend to be a little short on cash, and this has worked reasonably well. Also, on the sales side, we have completely realigned our direct sales, put in a new incentive scheme, etc. And in fact, in July and August, we're seeing good sales growth compared to the last 6 months. Kenya, the rate cap, at this stage, the legal opinions we've got suggest this doesn't impact credit-only institutions, but we're watching this space carefully because if it doesn't affect us, it's probably an opportunity in that we can push to take on some of the customers that the bigger banks are having to offload. If it does affect us, we've got a fairly big challenge on our hand around pricing. Today, our cost of funding in Kenyan shillings is around 13%, and with a cap at 4% over central bank rate, that gives us a 1% spread. Mozambique, we're all aware of the market disruption going on there due to non-disclosure of debt by the government. While we've seen obviously a slowdown in our book, you can see 16%, which is under half our normal growth rate. That's due to a 700 basis point interest rate increase, which when combined with the currency depreciation shows negative loan growth on our book. So not a great place to be, and as a result, we have taken a 20 million pula provision for 2.5% of our loan book to ensure that we're adequately covered if things deteriorate. But no signs of that at this stage, so just a prudent move by us. And lastly, Nigeria renounced a recession. We have been investing using our consultancy and partnership inspiring development to ensure that we are well positioned next year. We've made a small loss this year to date, but we do see that turning around next year. Moving to NPLs and asset quality. Overall, no deterioration in the book. This is getting a lot more focused now. We've beefed up our credit and risk teams. We've given you impairment coverage on total book. This rises to some 60-odd percent if you look at coverage of the non-performing book. And our loan loss rate has remained well within the 2-4% range that we are targeting. Indeed, if you reverse out the Mozambique amount, the cost of risk in the first half is only 1.75%. On funding, moving to slide 11, we continue to look to increase our debt equity ratio. It was 52% last June, it's now 67%, or little move from year end. But we have got some significant funding in the pipeline that should close in the next few months that will provide for more gearing, and our target remains 1-to-1 debt equity in the short to medium term, perhaps a little higher debt to equity in the longer term. We've got plenty of upside in terms of availability in both our Kuna and Rand MTNs, again, we can talk more about the funding mix. We are looking to further bank lines that we'll be drawing down, and we have a number of DFIs in the mix, including OPIC. I should probably mention at this stage our share price before I hand to Colin. Very disappointing this year on the back of very low liquidity, but many of you, I'm sure, are seeing investors wanting to move into Asian equities or emerging market debt. Perhaps there's an opportunity from our funding perspective in that respect, but with limited buyers in the market and very low turnover of our stock, the price has drifted, although in the last week or so we've seen some clawback. I haven't looked today, but we were around two pula earlier this week. We do think it is very undervalued at that stage, and hope that the announcement that we are going to look to a share back will be received positively in the market. I think I'll pause at that stage. So good progress on moving our strategy forward. And a satisfactory set of results in light of business environment. Colin, over to you.
Great, thank you. Let me just talk through some of the figures in a little bit more detail for the first 6 months. On the balance sheet side of things, the loans and balances, Chris has covered, but again, good progress in challenging markets to grow mainly in local currency terms. Grow from a diversify from a country and a product solution perspective, and very importantly, no deterioration in the quality of the assets and hence the cost of risk. So, from that perspective, quite happy. On the revenue side of things, it has been a very competitive and continues to be a very competitive market. So, to that end, the fact that we've been able to, for the last couple of years and this reporting period, also maintain our gross and net interest margins has been okay. There's a few levers within that. So our gross interest yields were pretty consistent, We still have opportunities going forward to have new transactional revenue streams, non-funded income. And equally, in an environment whereby Botswana has been the exception, in most of the other markets where we operate, interest rates have been increasing significantly. We have been able to keep our overall cost of funding stable period on period. From a cost perspective, though, OPEX and staff costs did increase by 51% period on period. And as a result, our cost income ratio has come in above our target levels. It came in at 38%. I think go into a little bit more detail on the costs. In this reporting period, we do have the two transactions from 2015 being Letego Microfinance Bank Nigeria and Letego Bank Tanzania. So they account for about 50% of the increase in costs period on period, i.e. that they weren't there in the comparative period. The second factor in the increase in cost is that we did have a once-off cost in Rwanda relating to a tax issue, VAT, which we took a conservative view that it was best to account for that potential expense, and therefore we have included that in this year's figures. And the third aspect is the general increase in staff, in capacity, the investment in systems, infrastructure, IT, etc. And that accounts for the balance of the increase in funding. If we took it on a like-for-like basis, the increase would have been around about 21%. So still high around our growth in our interest and revenues. But just to put a bit more context around that, there are the three main factors that influenced and impacted on the 51% increase in OPEX and CAPEX. From a cost of risk perspective, I think as we've touched on, the overall cost of risk has been within our expected limits. We did amend our methodology slightly, which we've spoken about in prior calls. That continues. So our level of write-offs decreased, our level of provisioning increases, and overall we're quite comfortable with the coverage ratios that we have as of period. Finally then on the balance sheet, again, notwithstanding some of the Forex translation losses that have been incurred, the balance sheet remains very well capitalized. We've got a good cash reserves on hand. We've got a strong funding pipeline for the business to continue to grow going forward. So they were the few items that I wanted to touch upon. I think with that, we'll hand back to the operator and Harry for questions.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the queue. Again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Harry, would you like to ask some questions?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for that, guys. That was very, very thorough. Quick question on Botswana. We spoke, I remember when we did our call with you in February, and Chris, you put us in the picture about how FNB, for example, was targeting a very specific customer segment, being the executives of Botswana, with an interest rate offer, which was very aggressive and so on. Can you help us to understand how much of a threat the banks are to the totality of your Botswana business? Do you think they are just the banks are a threat perhaps to the highest end of your customers from a sort of socioeconomic point of view, but actually the business of going down into the heart of your franchise to slightly lower paid people is just not in the bank's kind of cultural setting? Do you want to tell us what is the nature of the threat, ongoing threat from the banks in Botswana to your business there?
I think you've captured the key elements of it. I mean, to be honest, whether I was a bank or otherwise, I wouldn't want to be lending $40,000 to $50,000 unsecured, as one or two of the banks are doing. That said, will they go down further into our segments? We are seeing that. The difference is around, from our perspective, a number of aspects. One, we are well recognized to move very quickly. So often our customers come to us because they need the money tomorrow. They've left it through poor administration, whatever it might be, to a relatively late stage. And the banks just don't have that ability to match us. They have tried, but are not successful. Secondly, banks are well known to play tricks around fees and various other things, whereas ours is a very transparent, this is what it's going to cost you per month. So they know that there's nothing else that they need to think about. So they're not necessarily going to come right down to the space we're in. They also, under their own credit policy, have affordability limits that are in some cases much higher than the statutory minimums. Now, we ourselves have looked at those because they haven't been updated for a while. But no, they're not attacking all segments, and they will be unable to follow us as we diversify into new sectors of the economy. Mining executives is a fairly easy win from their perspective. It's a shame from ours that there's not much we can do about that if they're offering, I think I suggested, rates that are nearly half our own. We have done some price adjustments on larger borrowers, but we don't think it's prudent to give away all that margin. When the rates start coming up again, it will be hard to reprice upwards. I'm sure the banks will find that.
Thanks, Chris. I think we've got a question in the queue.
Yes, we do, sir. Question is from Cornelis Versek of Rubico. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Well, first of all, on Nigeria, I'm not a fan of you going into Nigeria because I think you have a lot of things you can do in Southern and Eastern Africa. But I have two questions on the acquisition. One is why did you not wait for the Naira to devalue and then enter? And the second, more question, have you already taken an impairment, a write-down on your acquisition in Nigeria, given that there's been a huge devaluation? I wonder if that's already in the numbers now.
Okay. Why did we not wait? Well, the analogy one uses is you can't determine when the bus is going to come. We did hold back on our payments to actually was around the third week of January, specifically because of that threat. But I think, Cornelius, you need to look at Nigeria as a long-term play, not a short-term opportunistic play. In the segment that we're looking to play, whether it's our traditional government employee formal consumer lending business or whether it's the micro and small enterprise, the opportunity in that market is enormous. And the fact that it's going through tough times has little impact in the space that we're operating today. Yes, it would if we moved into government employees who aren't being paid, so something to watch out for. But longer term, there's huge upside by having a presence in Nigeria. It's not like we don't know the market. I used to sit until we entered on one of the big banks' boards. It is a highly agricultural-based economy, despite everyone saying it's oil and gas, and there will be huge opportunities in that space, in the low-income housing space, etc., etc. As to impairments, I'm going to let Colin answer it, but effectively, we ask them to book as part of our pricing a large provision to basically clear the decks of most of the non-performing debt on their books.
Yeah, and the other part of that sort of question, I think, is around have we impaired our investment? There was goodwill arising on the transaction, and that has not been impaired. However, it has been revalued based on for the currency. So that adjustment did go through as at 30th of June, but it goes through below the line in the statement of change in equity, rather than as a cost to the P&L.
Okay, you have revalued the currency, but not revalued your entire investment. So you have revalued the goodwill?
Under IFRS, we are required to revalue the goodwill based on the underlying currency. And therefore, that adjustment has gone through, so you'll see that the value of goodwill has reduced slightly, and the corresponding sign of that entry was the foreign currency translation reserve. So, again, it's part of the accounting for multi-currencies in an environment where the exchange rates can be volatile. So it's an accounting entry in the moment.
Okay, yeah, so implicitly you say that in terms the business has increased in value. But
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that from an accounting entry perspective, when you consolidate, goodwill arises under consolidation. Therefore, from an accounting perspective, you revalue the goodwill based on the underlying currency. So it's not a new standard. It's been there for quite a few years.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question is from Deepak Talani of Ashmore. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. A few quick questions. On the previous question that you answered, the impairment for the currency issues will come in the next quarter. Can you estimate how much that will be after the Naira has devalued so much? Second question was about the share buyback. You mentioned it quickly in your comments. If you can give us some details on timeline on that. And the third question was the OPEX and staff costs have gone up 51% year on year. I understand the reasons. What is the expected OPEX and staff costs that we can expect in the next year, basically by quarter? What's the standard base rate? Thank you.
Thanks, Deepak. On the first item, I don't think I said it's going to be the goodwill for Nigeria will be impaired. What accounting standards require is twofold. One is that the underlying goodwill from a local currency perspective has to take that into account, so that's just an accounting entry. There has to be an annual assessment of if the carrying value of goodwill has been impaired from an operating perspective. That will be done as part of the year end audit, and at this point in time, we don't expect to take any adjustments on that. Obviously, there's a number of months to go, but at this point in time, we do not believe that the underlying operations of the business have been impacted. On the share buyback, given that we've released the interim results have been released yesterday, we are therefore now out of the closed period. And subject to liquidity, the availability of shares to purchase, we will start to implement that from Monday. However, it depends on the liquidity of the availability of shares to purchase. But the intention is to start on Monday. And I think on the third aspect in terms of OPEX and staff costs, Clearly what we look to do is try for our revenues to grow faster than costs. We didn't achieve that in this quarter, but notwithstanding that, we believe that the investments we made are for the long-term benefit of business. I think, as I alluded to earlier on, our challenge is to bring in new revenue lines, is to continue to diversify our revenue streams. And we do believe that, you know, we are making good progress on that. So we would expect our prior guidance to rent cost income ratio of around about 35% remains, and we hope to get back to there as soon as possible.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Shah Dua of Charlemagne Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gents. Couple of questions from me as well, please. First one is the large foreign currency translation reserve hit in the balance sheet. If you can just explain where that's coming from. I mean, I'm assuming it's a lot of information being collected, but I don't know. There's no note as far as I can see. So if you could just talk through what that impact is, please. Secondly, on the share buyback, I was going to ask the same question, but can you just remind us what approval you have in place now? I remember this first raised its head sometime early last year. I don't think anything about that date. So if you can just tell us what capacity you have for share buyback now. A third question I was going to ask was, you mentioned Kenya, and obviously it's very fresh, these new regulations. You don't think it impacts you as a regulation. But I guess there's going to be pressure nonetheless. I mean, these regulations have been announced with the idea that the cost of credit is going to be lower for ordinary Kenyans. So what do you currently charge in Kenya, and how do you see that coming down? I mean, obviously, yeah, a cap at 14.5 would be very difficult, but what is a level at which you think you can still make a decent return on that market? And maybe just in relation to that, I don't have a feel for, you know, how different your lending rates are in your different markets at this stage. It might be quite helpful just to get a broad rundown of that. You said Botswana has come down, but I would obviously see the average across the group, but no idea how much variability there is across different markets.
Thank you very much. For the 6 months of June, there was two main drivers for the foreign currency translation reserve impact. The first was the further depreciation of the Mozambique Medicash. That made up the lion's share of it, about 247 million pula or so. And the second was the adjustment on goodwill that we were just talking about. And it wasn't just Nigeria, but there was also a couple of other countries as well where we had goodwill on original acquisition. So for the 6 months to June, it was Mozambique and a goodwill adjustment. They were the two drivers of the translation accounting entry that went through. On the share buyback, the approval that we have from shareholders, which was okayed by the Botswana Stock Exchange, the approval is to buy back up to 10% of the shares in issue, or incur a maximum of 550 million pula, say $50 million, and in the absolute amounts that could be spent. The mandate from shareholders is in place up until May 2017. The company cannot purchase any shares from any shareholder who owns more than 5%, nor from any director, nor from any from management or staff. We cannot do anything during a closed period, hence a lot of inactivity on this area in the past, given that we were in extended closed periods. And finally, I think the main two issues are we are not allowed to purchase shares at more than a 5% premium to the five-day historical trading price. and we must do a notice that in 10 days post any purchase, any buyback to the market to say what number and what price that we've done. So they're the conditionality, the main points around the conditionality of the share buyback program.
Yeah, okay.
On Kenya, our current average cost of borrowing to our customers is around about 30% mark. Sorry, 30% per annum. As Chris alluded to earlier on, our current cost of funding is around about 13%. So in the scenario, and as we said, it's early days, and at this stage, we do not believe that the regulations impact on our business there, but it is early days. Certainly to go down to a 14% mark with a cost of funding of 13% would not be sustainable. You asked what would be sustainable. I guess that clearly we do have a good interest margin in Kenya, which we could, there is scope to reduce. But clearly we just have to look and wait and see what how things pan out for in the short to medium term. You asked, I think your final question then was around if there's interest rate caps in other countries and a flavor of interest rates. The only other countries where we operate where there's interest rate caps is Namibia, where interest rates are capped at 2 times the local prime interest rate for non-bank institutions. And in Uganda, there is historical legislation which is actually about to be amended by new microfinance regulation. Finally then, just to give you a flavor, it differs market by market. We obviously, as we've said before, we try and be as close to the banks as possible because in the main pricing is driven not by regulations, not by caps, but by commercial terms. And generally in Southern Africa, our interest rates are between 20 and 30% per annum. And generally in East Africa, they will be slightly higher, between 30 to 40% per annum, as a general guide. So address your question there.
Yeah, so Southern Africa is 20 to 40, is that correct?
Southern Africa, 20 to 30.
20 to 30, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Bhuvan Ngara of Imara Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My question is on Mozambique. I have seen that we have made an impairment provision of 20 million Fula, largely because of the interest rate movement coming from the non-disclosure of the loans to IFI. But do you think if you factor in the security situation in Mozambique, do you think the 20 million will be sufficient, or you need to provide a little bit more? And how is the current instability affecting your growth outlook in that market, both in local current terms as well as in Pula terms? Thank you.
Several elements to your question there. How long the piece of string, I think, is how I'll answer. Is it sufficient? Actually, there's no indication in our existing book or customer behaviours, despite the large increase in interest rates, that our existing business is at risk. Remember, of course, that unless a customer comes and tops up or takes a new loan, they were fixed in as a rate in many cases, well below the current interest rates. In terms of instability, yes, in the centre of the country that continues to be an issue. We have clearly a policy that if we think our staff and therefore our customers at risk, we would close the branches. But yes, we have a couple of branches in those areas, but I think we have 15 branches, and I think probably that affects two or three of them. The rest are either north or south. So no significant impact on our business to date in that respect. So I don't know whether I've answered it or sidestepped it. It's very difficult to know, is there going to be further fallout? A lot of articles these days are saying that Mozambique could well turn the corner relatively quickly. It is a new government since this non-disclosure was made. And I think there's quite a lot of goodwill for the new government in the way the finance ministers handle things, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a little bit wait and see. And we hope that we will be able to release that provision in the next 12 months or so.
Thank you. Our next question is from Matthew Pouncett of Laurium Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the call, guys. My question is just around the buyback. So you mentioned that the approval from shareholders means that you cannot buy any shares from any shareholder holding above a 5% level. There were obviously include BIHL, who I think own around about 23%. I don't know if that's the right level. Can you confirm that and also confirm if there's any other shareholders which fall into that 5% bucket? And then a follow-up question on that would be, you know, the sort of five-day VWAP premium restriction, given sort of the liquidity in the stock, given that there's a meaningful shareholder who you won't be buying back shares from, it seems a difficult ask. Why not consider something like a special dividend or another method to sort of gear up the balance sheet?
Matthew, thanks for that. Just to confirm, the restriction on purchasing from a shareholder that holds more than 5%, that was a requirement of the Botswana Stock Exchange that we had to put into the surplus of shareholders. So yes, it does impact on Botswana Insurance Holdings Limited. They currently own actually 25.6%. The only other shareholder that it would impact on is ADB One, a private equity firm based in the UK. So they're the rules that we have to comply with, the same with the 5% premium. So we certainly take your point that will it be possible to implement the buyback given the various criteria and given the liquidity that's always an issue? And it's a fair comment. However, what we've said all along is that this was one aspect of looking at the balance sheet structure of the business and aligning the balance sheet structure to facilitate higher return on equity, and it was always going to be one aspect of an overall approach, and it still is. So we will see how things pan out, and as we said in the past, should a special dividend be necessary, should the business be in a position from a cash flow perspective to do a special dividend, then we would consider that. But that's not on the agenda immediately, but it's something that we will consider if necessary, subject to all of the different factors that we just spoke about.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final question is from Jonathan Kruger of Africa Merchant Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for the call. I'd just like to understand under what circumstances will the foreign currency reserve realize into a P&L impact. I suppose it's from an accounting perspective, when would you realize an impairment? And then also on your Mozambican loan book, I might have missed it, but what is the non-performing loan percentage? And then what is the split between the different types or the different segments in terms of payroll lending, unsecured lending, etc.? Thank you.
Jonathan, okay, thanks. Your first question there was under what circumstances would the foreign currency translation losses go from being below the line to above the line, and the short answer to that would be if we were to sell the business, because then they would become realized rather than unrealized. The second part, I think, of your question was around NPLs. For Mozambique, our overall cost of risk is within our normal levels for a pure consumer lending, consumer finance business, between 1% and 3%. And at present, Mozambique, it's 100% for now. It's 100% that segment. Sir, my apologies if I've missed any other part of your question, but is that okay?
It was, yeah. The other part was the split between the different type of lending in Mozambique, payroll, unsecured, etc.
Well, in Mozambique, as I alluded to, 100% of our loans to customers are to government civil servants. So, outside of Mozambique, in other territories, there is a mix, and the overall mix for the group as at June is 89% is lending via deduction at source, and 11% is microfinance loans. And as we said in past to the guidance, our cost of risk expectation for the deduction between 1% and 3%, and for microfinance between 3% and 6%. And pretty much all of our businesses as at the end of June fall within those parameters.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our final question is from Tom Egbert of Frontier Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Chris. Colin, thanks for the call. Chris, question for you. Can you give us your personal perspective on the sort of the news of the day, the interest rate cap issue, with regard to how it might affect other markets? You know, of course, you have an ongoing dialogue with several regulatory bodies on the continent, and you know, coming up to this conference that you're going to, I think, next week. I mean, what are you expecting to be, you know, the tone and the general perspective from, you know, market participants and regulatory bodies? And is there just a lot of noise right now, or are we seeing something that could actually affect, you know, net interest margins on a permanent basis? You know, just if we're trying to think about what we're going to be talking about in a year, are we still going to be talking about this, or is this short-term noise?
You know, it's hard to answer that. Clearly, Uhuru signing this into regulation is perceived as a political move. When I was running Standard Chartered in Kenya back in the early 2000s, there was a Donde bill, which was the same thing, which the banks managed to avoid. Clearly, until there is absolute clarity, there's going to be a lot of noise. And if the clarifications that I believe are coming out almost while we're talking from the central bank governor do change the interest rate structure of the Kenyan markets, we can expect contagion to other markets. Colin's already indicated that Uganda has a form of interest rate cap in place, but Tanzania has not. And I think it would be fair to say that most regulators would be against this, and perhaps the Kenyan banks have got too greedy, and therefore this is why it's being done. So at next week's conference, that's the other side of the world. It's not an African conference. I wish it was, because it's a lot of travel to get there for a couple of days. But the governors of Tanzania and I think Kenya will be there, and I do intend to have a conversation just to say, where is this likely to go, to better understand it. But certainly in Kenya, it's going to make, I think, the first-tier banks a lot less profitable. I think it's going to put in question a number of the second-tier banks' long-term sustainability. And I think for those tier three banks that are not already in trouble, this is probably the death bell. If it affects microfinance, credit-only institutions, we've got some issues, but it's not a great step forward. It's quite a big step back. I don't know. I'm talking around the topic. It's very hard to see, and it's quite surprising to me that this was allowed to go through. We will just have to see over the next 2 weeks. I think it's been targeted the 14th of September as a implementation date. What form it takes, the scope of it will be very interesting to see. It could be positive for us as long as we're not drawn into the same environment. Interest rate wise, Colin's given some feel for that earlier on. Once our margins come down much below, I'm going to say 15% between whatever, bells will be ringing quite loud. Normally we like a margin of 20% to ensure that the costs of, particularly in the microfinance business, the costs of distribution and reach and all of that good stuff are covered, as well as the slightly higher non-performing debt that we perceive in the microfinance book.
Okay, and just a bit of housekeeping. On slide 9, on the left side, there's a market penetration chart. I think Kenya was at 2% for December. It's showing zero. Obviously, you still have a loan book there of $39 million. Is that just like a graphical thing, or is there some other reason why that would have gone to zero?
Tom, apologies. Those marketers are for our government deduction and source businesses. So I think what we had done in December, when we included the total in the first one, rather than just the consumer loans part of it. So that's a typo on our fault, on our part. So apologies.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that is unfortunately all we have time for. Do you have any closing comments?
Yeah, I think it just remains to thank Chris and Colin for being with us today. Everybody, the call has been recorded, as usual, and we will be producing a transcript, which is available on request. But thank you, everybody, for joining us today, and thank you again to the team from Letico for making time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.